So for me, being vegan was unexpected. So I am the youngest of three daughters, and my mother raised us. She was divorced and was working, and so we cooked for as long as I can remember, and dinner had to be ready, when she got home. So we learned how to cook well very early on. And my mother was health conscious as an omnivore, so we didn't have junk in the house. We didn't have a lot of processed food in the house. We had total cereal. We had skim milk. We had whole wheat bread. We cooked from scratch every night. We maybe ate out. Let me get some water. We maybe ate out once a week. So it was pretty healthy for omnivore food. And I hated it. So I hated vegetables, anything green, anything that I was told was healthy or looked healthy, I didn't want it. I wanted greasy and creamy and sugary. And I think that I knew about those things because of my cousins. And some of my cousins, we have a huge family here in the DC area, and we were all very close growing up, and so we were in and out of each other's homes all the time. And some of my cousins had this junkier food that I discovered and actually loved. So when I went over their house, I just pigged out and I loved it, but we didn't have that at home. So my mother planted the earliest seeds for healthier eating, for sure. And then when I went to, so I went to Sidwell Friends School here in DC from 3rd through 12th grade, and I had a seventh, two teachers in 7th grade who were vegetarian, and they wanted our camping trip to be vegetarian, and I thought that was a horrible idea, so I wrote a petition against it. So
Would
I
you?
was really anti-vegetarian, yeah,
Okay.
anti-healthy. So 7 years after that, I'm a sophomore at Amherst College, and this is 1986, and our Black Student Union brought Dick Gregory to campus to talk about the political, economic, and social state of Black America. And instead, he talked about the plight of Black America and how unhealthily most folks eat and why we should become vegetarian. And he was talking about it in the context of so many things beyond food, but that were related to food, and which I knew nothing about, these dots, these connecting dots. So he talked about social justice. He talked about factory farming. He talked about the USDA, the food industry, all of these things having to, sustainability at that time, all of these things having to do with food that I just was unaware of. And I was very interested in those things at the time. I was a budding activist, so all of these things were really important to me. And I also had 5 pounds my freshman year from eating whatever I wanted because I was away from home for the first time. So I ate all kinds of hamburgers, hot dogs, pizzas, desserts, everything I couldn't get at home. And so, if I had known he was going to talk about healthy food and healthy eating, I may not have gone, So
Sure.
he talked about these things, and it was a surprise to me. And what really got me, besides him connecting these dots, is that he traced the path of a hamburger from a cow on a factory farm through the slaughterhouse process to a fast food restaurant to a clogged artery to a heart attack. And as I said, I ate hamburgers and cheeseburgers almost every day. So that really just kind of stopped me cold. And his entire talk just rocked my world because of all of these connections. And we didn't know that he had been a vegetarian, well, really at that point, a vegan for the last 20 years because of the practice of nonviolence during the civil rights movement. He was a right-hand person to King. So he became a vegetarian in 65. Because he extended the practice of nonviolence to animals, and then in 67 became a vegan for health reasons. And so by the time he came to Amherst in 86, he was, had been vegan for 20 years and was out promoting this around the country and particularly to college students, but we didn't know that. So I felt like it was an intervention. I mean, as I look at it later, that he that he came at that time for me, it was the perfect time for me to hear these things. So I immediately gave up hamburgers and hot dogs and all meat for a week, and then thought he was crazy, but I couldn't get what he said out of my mind. And so when I went home for the summer a few months later, I went to the library and read everything I could. My mother and my sister did as well. One of my sisters, who was a senior at Tufts and was home for the break also. And by the end of the summer, decided to go vegetarian. And that's really how it started for me.
Wow. Yeah, I think on your website that after his talk, I think you phrased it like, I lasted for a week after, you know, you had made that initial decision.
The hardest part was that I didn't know what to eat. I didn't know what to do. Like, I heard the lecture, I heard the talk, but after that, you know, this is 1986, 10 years before we have the internet, right? So I don't know where to go. I don't know where to look. No one around me, none of my friends none of my friends decided to go vegetarian or try it as a result of the lecture. So I was really doing it by myself, and I didn't have any information. So I didn't know what to do. I just knew why I should do it based on his talk, that I should try it, that it made sense. But I didn't know what to eat instead of meat. So I just was eating everything else but meat, you know? And because I was such a big meat eater, there was a really big gap on my plate. So I was doing grains, and I was doing, you know, I was doing rice and pasta and bread and cheese and salad for a week. And I couldn't sustain myself off of that, you know? And I didn't really know what to do. And at that time, Amherst didn't have vegan meals. You know, they had salad, they had some vegetarian meals, but it wasn't, you know, that was not really something that was focused on then. You know, vegetarian was just kind of, or at least I wasn't aware that they were doing, you know, daily vegetarian meals. It was, you know, for me, it was all new.
Sure.
So if I thought something didn't have meat in it, if it looked like it didn't have meat in it, then I ate it, you know, but I didn't really see a lot of options at the time. So it was just me not knowing what to do, and it's being very different than it is today. You know, I had to find out for myself. So that meant, you know, going to the library when I got home, because I really felt after that first week, there's no way I could do it. I didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, it was just easier to go back, and nobody else was doing it. It was just easier to go meet. But I really couldn't get what he said out of my mind. But that's why it was so hard, because I didn't have information. I didn't know what to do. I just knew I wanted to do it.
After you were able to commit, you know, and you've been vegan now for decades, what kind of differences did you notice in your life?
I'll tell you a little bit more just about that journey and why it was so life-changing. So I took my junior year away from Amherst, and I went to Nairobi, Kenya for the first semester, and then Howard University here in DC for the second semester. So when I went to Kenya for the first semester, I could not be vegetarian, because when I signed up for the program months before, I wasn't a vegetarian, and so they weren't prepared for me. So I had to eat meat. But there were a couple of experiences with animals. I didn't interact with animals, you know, growing up as a city girl. My mother grew up on a farm in South Carolina, and for that reason, we did not have pets.
Okay.
So,
gotcha.
I didn't have experiences with animals. And so in Kenya, as part of that experience, I mean, we lived in the city and all of that, but as part of the experience, we spent 2 weeks with Samburus, and we went on safari for 2 weeks as well. And as part of that experience, we saw them kill live goats. I saw a goat being born, I saw a goat being killed, skinned, blood drained, chopped up to make stew. I ate the stew, even though I felt guilty about eating it. And then we watched animals in their environment out on the Mara in a big lorry truck. We had to observe them. That was part of our studies. And as part of that 2 weeks on safari, we went to a restaurant the last night called The Carnivore, where they allowed people to have the animals that they killed served to them. And so we didn't kill any animals, but one of those animals was served to us, and it looked like a gazelle that had been roasted over a pit hole, and they brought it out to our table and began to carve it from head to hoof. And it was in that moment, I was disgusted, and I said I would never eat another piece of meat. So that was the last time. I didn't eat that animal, but, you know, whatever had eaten before them, that was the last time I ate meat. After that animal situation at the carnivore, I didn't eat any more meat for the rest of the trip. So when I got home, I went to Howard University. So I was walking back and forth from my house to Howard, and I discovered that I was passing through a community that was filled with Black vegan establishments. So there were, as it turned out, 13 100% vegan establishments, most of them in this community near Howard University, and they were all Black owned, and they were the only 100% vegan establishments in Washington, D.C. at the time. Wow. And so I immersed myself in this community. So there were health food stores, there were herb shops, there were grocery stores, there were restaurants, there were cafes, there were food trucks, I mean, everything, bakeries. So, I mean, it was phenomenal. And so I just kind of became a sponge, and my mother also became a sponge, and we just kind of soaked in all of the information, ate the food, went to classes. Again, this is 10 years before the internet, so they brought speakers from all over the world to these shops, these public lectures, cooking classes, and we went. And so it was from this community that I learned how to be vegan. So I learned where to shop, how to make the food delicious, how to make it affordable, how to make it convenient, the politics of it, you know, extending what I had learned from Dick Gregory. And a lot of these folks had been influenced by Dick Gregory, had been influenced by the civil rights movement, the Black Liberation Movement, other religious organizations. For all kinds of reasons, folks were vegan and had established, and some had established these restaurants and cafes and stores. So I was there for that one semester, and then for the summer. So I had a good 9 months. So this is where I learned how to be vegan. And so that community was the life-changing community for me. I don't know that I would have been able to do it as well, as soon, and as thoroughly if that community had not existed. And also my mother and sister went vegetarian and then vegan at the same time that I did. So we had our own family community, and then I had this huge Black vegan community in D.C. So that's why it was life-changing for me. That when and where I enter veganism is from that community. And so the changes that I noticed right away, so I didn't give up cheese right away. It would take me another year at Amherst, my senior year, to finally let go of cheese. Okay. But the changes that I know, yeah, and cheese is usually the hardest, or is often the hardest for most people, because it's so addictive. And that was purely mind over matter. So I was eating cheese while I was still reading about the cruelty involved in its production and how unhealthy it is.
Yeah.
So it was working in the background while I was still eating cheese, but I was still working on myself, trying to, you know, cross that bridge. And so finally, one day I did. I don't remember the day. I don't remember the month. I just remember that one day I just said, it's not worth it, you know, the health risk. And I stopped. And so all of that was a mind over matter. So after that, what I noticed when I went fully vegan is that my skin cleared up, and my menses became lighter, and my cramps went away. And because I did it, and those were the major differences. And because I was about 20 at the time, I've been vegan for 35 years, so 20 to 55. I've been vegan all of my adult life, so I don't have much more to compare it with, right?
Sure.
Because this has been my experience. I lost the 25 pounds. That went away. But I'm tall and kind of thin and lanky, so gaining 25 pounds was not a huge deal.
Okay.
On the outside looking at me, but that weight gain went away. And so those were the major things that I noticed. And just continuing on from 20 to 55, my skin has continued to be clear. My menses continued to be light. I've been healthy all of my adult life so far. So, that's what I can say is the maintenance is that I've maintained my health for these past 35 years.
When did it go for you of, I'm working on myself, I'm making better decisions with diet and lifestyle, to wanting to include other women in that journey?
Right away, my sister and I were getting questions about what we were eating, in the late 80s and 90s. We weren't thinking about spreading the word. We were just like, oh, we're doing this. It's been great these couple of years. But we started getting questions from friends and families and friends and family, coworkers about what we ate because it was not as common. It was pretty uncommon then. For folks who weren't part of this vegan community in DC. And so we just started answering people's questions, and people invited us to their health fairs and to their churches to speak. And so we decided to kind of create a nonprofit organization and do this on the side. Now, my sister's a historian. I was the director of a museum, so we had full-time jobs. We were working 50 to 60 hours a week. But in our spare time, we were cooking, doing demos, doing talks, going to people's homes, and they would invite their friends over, and we would do cooking demos and talk to them and answer their questions, and we really enjoyed it. And then we had a friend who was an early adopter of the internet, so he suggested we should do a website. This was 1996, 97, so we created blackvegetarians.com, which was the first vegan website by and for African Americans, and also the fifth vegan website period on the internet. There were only four others, and they were blogs at the time, but ours was like an online magazine, so it was the first like that. So that's kind of how we started sharing it with others. We just were asked to do it, and we enjoy talking about it. And we started an animal rights organization for people of color because we were very, obviously very interested in animal rights as well. So we just did, we're doing all of these things. I did demos at Whole Foods. I did their first vegan demos in DC when they came in the early 2000s. My lectures were called from Soul Food to Whole Food.
Okay.
So all of this was just, because we were asked and we really enjoyed it. And then at a certain point, I decided that I liked doing this more than I liked doing museum work, although I loved doing museum work. And I decided to change professions after 10 years. And I went to graduate school, got a degree in a master's in public health nutrition, and made this my profession full time. So again, another way that it changed my life. I wasn't expecting that. But that's what happened. And so for me, that's how the sharing started. It started very early on. And I was very passionate about it because people were asking, but I also knew that I saw my family members getting sick. I saw my relatives and some of my friends, as we were getting into our 30s, getting sick, getting some diseases. And I knew that this was a way out. And so, as an activist, I also understood the connection, why food why we eat the way we eat, why some food is a bit, why, you know, there's food apartheid in low-income Black communities and other communities of color and other low-income communities. So all of these things were connected in the way that Dick Gregory talked about it to me, or talked about it to us early on. This was always just the way that I thought about it. And so when I shared it, I talked about these things too. And, but that's how we got into it. I've always, since that time, you know, have always wanted to share, and it's been a passion of mine to help. It's part of freedom to me to know, to have the expectation that you're going to be healthy for the rest of your life. Most people don't. Most people think that they're going to decline as they get older, and sometimes in middle age, right? Some chronic disease is gonna start happening because their relative had it, their mother, their aunt, their sister. And that's the expectation. But I want people to have the expectation that they will be healthy for the rest of their lives, and to see how liberating that is. And so, and also just, it's unacceptable to me that Black women have the worst health outcomes, worst health experiences in the country. It's not a surprise with the system that we live under, but it's still unacceptable. And so for me, this is a way to reverse that. This is a way for us to take back control of our health. And so these are the reasons that, you know, it's so important for me to do this work.
The first thing I thought of when I saw your first book's title, By Any Greens Necessary, you know, obviously I started thinking about Malcolm X, and, you know, By Any Means Necessary, and just was reading more about Justice for All Species, that, and, you know, the Black Vegetarian Society of New York, and, you know, We Feed Our People, just everything that you've done. And, you know, for some people, it might seem that it's disconnected, food and social justice and Black communities and Black health, but I would just really love for you to talk a little bit more, since you are so passionate about it.
It's inseparable, really, because the reason that we eat the way that we eat, you know, it is based on personal taste, but what is available to us is not personal taste. We don't usually have a choice in that. The USDA and Big Food, the processed food companies, the junk food companies, they determine what we have access to, right? They determine what's fed to us in the school breakfast and lunch programs. They determine what the curriculum will be for medical schools, for nutrition programs. So people, and they also determine typically what is being shared to the media, or certain media. So people don't realize or don't think about really how much influence the federal government, the USDA, and you know, these big processed food companies have over what they eat. And so that's political, right? Yeah. Food is inherently political. And a lot of people just think that they are eating the way they eat just because they want to, or just because the food is cheap. But they determine what's also available in our communities, right? So where there are folks who are affluent, where there are folks who have money, they have the best access to healthy food. And where the folks have the least amount of money, the least resources, by design, they have the least access to healthy food. That's just how the system works, right? So it's not a surprise, I think. It's just that people don't often think about food in this way, because it's such a basic, you know, necessity, primal kind of thing we all have to eat. But, you know, we actually typically don't have a lot of control over what's available unless we're growing the food ourselves. And so it's inherently intertwined, whether we know it or not, right? And so with me, I just found out at a very, very early age how intertwined it was, what the politics were around the food system in this country. And so have always taught it and thought about it. But I think that if folks, my experience has been that, you know, I've been teaching it in various ways for a lot of years, for 30 plus years. And whether I'm teaching at a university, whether I'm teaching, in a low income housing community, right?
Yeah.
It's the same conversation that I have. And I find that as soon as people make the connections or hear what I'm saying about the connections, instantly they get it and they want to do something to change, right? So okay. So it's not really something that's insurmountable for people. I think that it's just something that a lot of folks don't think about. And I'm presenting this information. It's really important for me to present it to make it plain. You mentioned Malcolm X, and yes, by any means necessary is a riff on by any means necessary, but one of the things that he and De Gregory talked about was making complex issues plain. So I have a master's degree in public health nutrition. I can make things complicated, but I refuse to do that because it's not necessary. So I want to make these connections very plain and very easy and very contextual for people. If you understand why the system means the system that we live under means that people of color, Black folks in particular, have the least access to good housing, the least access to good education, the least access to well-paying jobs. Food and health are another component of that. And so once people get the connection, they instantly see it and want to do something about it. And so that might mean figuring out, okay, where do I need to grow my own food? Do I need to see if there are community gardens in my area? Do I need to see what's available in the corner store? Do I need to see what's available in the supermarket that might be healthier? Like, what can I do now? And that's what I found across the board, regardless of the community that I'm talking to, the folks that I'm talking to, instantly they get it. And that's a powerful thing.
What kind of questions or concerns do you feel like come up the most frequently? And how do you talk to people about those?
So the questions that come up most frequently are, why haven't we been taught this?
Okay.
Why don't I know this? Why isn't my doctor telling me this? Why don't I know this, right? Why is this? That's the immediate question when I make these connections with folks and have this conversation. And it's an obvious question. Why don't we know this? And who benefits from us not knowing it, right? So that why question is there. And then the other question is, next, what do I eat? What do you eat? And what should I eat? So that goes to what can I immediately do to change things, to take back control? And so it's the question of why is it like this? And why haven't I ever been told this? And then, okay, so what should I eat? Now what should I do? So those are the two basic questions, and it's across the board. And so I basically, talk about what I've just shared, why the system is, the way it is in terms of food and health, and then helping people to figure out what they can do right away. So I typically, it depends on the community that I'm in, what I ask them, well, what are some of your favorite foods? What does a typical meal look like for you? And I ask someone to raise their hand. And then I share with them how many of those foods are already vegan. So if you're eating fruit, if you're eating vegetables, if you're eating grains, if you're eating beans, if you're eating nuts, you're already eating vegan food. So it's not unfamiliar. You just maybe haven't called it that. And how can we make it healthier and have you do more of it? And I ask people, what is available in your community? Where are the community gardens? Where's the closest health food store? What's the supermarket you go to? So real brass tacks, real practical stuff, like what is available to you now? And how can you find out? If you don't know, how can you find out? So I give resources like happycow.net, which is you know it, but most people don't, who are new to veganism or, before they go vegan. And I asked them to just kind of think about what other, how they can figure out what other stores are available to them. Where can they get healthy food in their communities?
Just what I've seen, you know, when talking to people about vegetarianism or veganism, is that there's not a general understanding of nutrition in our country, is the sense that I get. You know, we're raised with the food pyramid that says you have, which pretty much says you have to eat dairy, you have to eat meat,
right?
Eat it in this amount. And then, you know, when people, I've had a few friends who have gone vegetarian, but they're not getting their B6, they're not getting their B12, they're starting to become very deficient, and then they get very sick, and they're like, well, you can't be vegetarian and be healthy. And it's like, no, you can, but, you know, can you talk to us just a little bit about what kind of advice do you give people? How can people go vegetarian and stay healthy? And in particular, you know, when you say a vegan diet, if you could just kind of clarify that, because I know a lot of times, you know, when people will transition, they'll go straight to the processed vegan foods where it's like, oh, it's meat. And it's like, oh, but when you actually read some of the labels, like, there's a lot of really good products out there, but some of them I'm like, I don't know that this is healthier just because it says that it's vegan. So, you know, how do you like help people navigate that?
Well, I tell people that, you know, I promote a whole foods diet, whole foods, plant-based meal. So for me, that is the health, you know, that's how I do it. So I talk specifically about what that looks like, the core foods, beans, nuts, whole grains, fruits, and vegetables as ingredients. And so I see, and those are the healthiest foods. They have the most nutrients. They have the most fiber. You want to eat color. You want to focus on color as opposed to focusing on calories. If, you know, calories are not an issue for you, if overeating or overweight is not necessarily an issue for you, you really want to focus on color, because The more colors in your food, the more colorful, the more nutrients they have, the more phytonutrients, the more antioxidants. So, and all of those are health promoting and cancer fighting, disease fighting properties in food. And each specific color represents a different kind of antioxidant, a different kind of phytonutrient. So instead of having to know what exactly is in food that is red or food that is yellow or food that is green, just eat the rainbow, and they work together in a symphony, and you'll get it all that you need. So I basically tell folks to focus on, you know, berries, focus on, you know, nuts, focus on beans, focus on whole grains, focus on dark leafy vegetables, which are the healthiest vegetables on the planet. And I list what these are. And then, you know, how do you incorporate them? What does an actual balanced meal look like? So that might be a one bowl meal. It might be a big, whole grain rice dish. It might be brown rice or black rice or wild rice. And you might have a Thai curry with mixed vegetables and almonds or tofu or tempeh with it. So, and that's in one bowl, how you can get all of the nutrients that you need in that particular meal. Or it can be a wrap, it can be a salad, it can be a taco, it can be a pizza, it can be a fajita. There's so many options. You know, it can be Italian, Japanese, Thai, Korean, Ethiopian, American, soul food. You know, all of these cuisines have healthy plant-based, whole plant-based foods. And so it just kind of depends on what people are familiar with. I always try to get people to start with familiar foods, stuff that they already cook. So if it's a stir fry and you add chicken or beef or fish or pork, make the stir fry with the vegetables, saute it in water or some healthier oil, and then throw in some, instead of, you know, the meat, throw in some cashews or some almonds, or throw in some, some some seitan or throw in some tofu or some tempeh. And so all you've done is basically swapped out the main source of protein. The same thing with pasta, the same thing with soups. So whatever the familiar foods are, look at what the majority of it probably already is vegan or plant-based. And so what can you substitute for the main source of protein? And what can you substitute for the white rice or the white pasta? You know, you can substitute a whole grain pasta, you can substitute a whole grain, period. So it's really getting people to start with familiar foods and just swapping out, and also adding to their plate. So if it's a person that doesn't usually eat vegetables at each meal, if it's a person that doesn't usually eat whole grains, so we can start with adding, thinking about expanding rather than taking away. So how can you add some colorful vegetables to what you're already fixing? And you can start there if you're not ready to go 100%. So there are lots of ways, you know, to talk to folks about it so that it's not daunting. It's step by step, and it's easy steps that they can make. Again, just ask people to be open to go to swapping out some of the dishes that they might have. So asking someone if they're open to having a vegan meal once a day, once a week, a couple of times a week, and then have them use a familiar food, a familiar dish that they'd be making anyway, and then just swapping it out to make it vegan. And yeah. I think that's an easy way to get in with someone who's resistant, because these are typically, folks don't realize that they're already eating a lot of vegan food. They're already eating a lot of plant-based foods. So it's just taking the meat out, right? For yes. one meal and then trying it without it. And then, you know, you can always break down protein, right? That question will hopefully die one day, but.
Yeah.
You know, if folks understand, you know, what protein is, that it's not an actual, protein is a component of food. It is not a piece of meat. So protein is found in plant-based foods, and it is found in animal-based foods too. It's just that with animal-based foods, you also get saturated fat and cholesterol. In plant-based foods, you get no cholesterol, and you typically, if it's a healthier plant-based food, you're getting no or low saturated fat, right? So it's a healthier way to get your protein. And then you can give them a list of the foods with the highest protein content, and compare that to foods with the highest plant-based protein content, and compare that to animal-based protein content. And have them see it right there, but then also talk about the baggage that comes with the animal-based protein. So for their personal health, and then not to mention climate change, animal cruelty, all of that. So there are lots of ways in to have this conversation. And one of the things that I recommend also is for folks just to try it. Try it for 7 days, try it for 14 days, try it for 21 days, and just see how you feel. Yeah. Watch documentaries like The Game Changers. It's an excellent one because it actually focuses on athletes going vegan and their performance, and that answers that question, period, right? Once people watch that, if they had protein questions to begin with, they're answered very thoroughly. From watching that documentary. So there are lots of ways in to approach these questions. And then you mentioned processed foods also.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, you know, the B6 and the B12 question, I remember now. And what I tell people is that you can be deficient in vitamins and minerals. You can be deficient in nutrients as an omnivore. You can be deficient as a vegan. But it doesn't mean because you go vegan, you are automatically going to be deficient. And that you yeah. have to take a supplement by default. You know, it doesn't. If you are eating a healthy vegan diet, you don't. But I suggest that omnivores and vegans get their blood work done and find out, you know, get it done once a year, get it done twice a year, you know, the standard blood work so you can find out what your levels are, right, of the tip of, you know, iron. B12, vitamin D. So you can know whether or not you actually, as an omnivore or vegan, need to supplement with more food that contains that, or actually with supplements for a period of time.
Are you hopeful for our future? Do you feel like more people are starting to wake up to these issues?
I am hopeful. I mean, yeah, I'm definitely, just from my experience, I know that these studies that, or this latest study from Pew Research Center that came out in 2016 that I've quoted and other folks have quoted a lot, showing that African Americans are the fastest growing vegan and vegetarian demographic. That is true, and it has not changed. So since these studies have been done, any reports, the Vegetarian Resource Group used to do these almost yearly surveys, right, to determine who is vegan and vegetarian. And African Americans, Black folks, were always the highest in number, at least double than white folks who were surveyed. So this has been consistent for decades. This is not news to me, and not news to folks who have been following this, you know, this information. Mm. So it's consistent, and for all of these reasons that we've talked about, right? It's there are all these reasons to do it, and there are all these connections made. And also, you know, who is working in as your fiance, you know, as it affected him, who is working in these fisheries, who fish factories, who is working, or fish vessels, who is working in these, it's people of color, depending on where it is. If it's in, you know, these hog farms in North Carolina, South Carolina, it's Black folks, low-income Black folks, and whose communities are being affected, the waterways, the air, the noxious species in the air and the water and the land. It's low-income people of color, right? You can't, that's why these issues are inseparable. You can't separate this whole system and how this food is produced. So I think that, and, you know, and then not to mention that, you know, we have the worst health outcomes, you know, from we have the highest rates of chronic diseases, some of which is because of plant-based foods. A lot of it is stress from living in this society. But that is all the more reason to resist and organize and to take care of ourselves while we do that, right, with healthy food. And so for all of these reasons, I think that these are the, you know, these are the numbers. This is why it's increasing so much, and in general, and particularly among Black folks. And it is just, you know, I have always known that it was going to increase. And just because it's smart, it's logical, it's common sense, it's healthy, it's a win-win-win, you know, and just more and more folks are going to get it. It's just that they have different information at the time. That's always been my view. So I don't know if hopeful is the word, but I just understand. I have an understanding that it's just that I always had that understanding. A cousin of mine reminded me of a conversation we had 20 years ago, who is now vegan. But at the time, she's like, how can you do this when nobody else is doing it? And I was like, oh, they'll be doing it. And I forgot that I said that. But it just is common sense to me. And I just, you know, if I got it as anti-healthy food as I was, anybody could do it.
Okay.
So, yeah. You know, I mean, and that's also why I have empathy, compassion for folks. I have the time and the energy to help people because I know where I was, and I feel like that Dick Gregory lecture was an intervention in my life. And who knows where I would be, what kind of diseases I might have, what kind of unhealthy weight I might, and other sicknesses, illnesses, diseases I might be dealing with or I might have dealt with if I had not gotten that early intervention. And it really, you know, and I took it to heart because I was headed, gaining 25 pounds in 1 year, if I had continued, I was definitely on that path, you know? And so, I understand the power of it. And so, yeah, I, you know, if I got it, anybody could get it. And so, yeah, I definitely know it's going to increase.
Yeah. I think that's very well said. And, you know, my last question is just, what's next for you? It seems like you keep your life exciting and moving and learning.
Thank you for that. And so I launched a nonprofit organization this year called 10 Million Black Vegan Women. And basically, our goal is to help 1 million Black women a year, to help 1 million Black women a year, every year for the next 10 years, go vegan. And that means to at least go vegan for 21 days in our free 21-day online program so that they can experience it for themselves, the health benefits. And that's based on the 10,000 Black Vegan Women program I did last year, last October, and we had 15,000 women sign up, and the health benefits that they shared in their post surveys were phenomenal. And so I wanted to increase that exponentially. And I just said, you know, I know it's a big, bold number, 10 million. Who am I to think that I can help, you know, 1 million women a year go vegan? But it's necessary. And I, you know, after 35 years being vegan and 30 plus years doing this work, I'm not afraid to say that. I'm not afraid to say that Black women need to go vegan and that I want to help us get there faster. It's unacceptable that we have the worst health. I want us to reverse that and to be among the healthiest. And I want us to be our own blue zone. And I want that to be the conversation. Oh, she's Black. Oh, Black women. Oh, they're the healthiest. You know, yeah. Or they are among the healthiest. They, you know, follow them. We're right now the face of veganism. You know, that fastest growing African American vegan and vegetarian population, that's mostly Black women. So we're already doing it. I just want us to get there faster because I want fewer deaths and sicknesses to happen. I want to change our health paradigm now. So I feel, you know, that I'm going to be doing this probably for the rest of my life, but definitely going hard for at least the next 10 years. And I wanted to do something that was worthy of my time and my interest and my passion at this point. And it isn't enough to just help people one-on-one or some thousands of folks. I want to go for it, you know, and help as many women as possible.